Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well-Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and occasionally ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. And it's always my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well-Armed Radio. And encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, questions, comments, criticism, participation, 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. You know, I meant to do that the past couple of weeks, is to take some calls and questions about the Rittenhouse case, and then I didn't get around to it. So, of course, now the verdict is in, and we may not have the same kinds of questions that we would have otherwise, but throw that out there. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here, and as we've been doing for the past 3 weeks now, we will have Kevin Mathewson. He's co-hosting the show with me. Kevin is in Kenosha, from Kenosha, former two-term alderman, criminal investigator, investigative journalist, and editor of the Kenosha County Eye. And Kevin's been in the court, in court every day for the Rittenhouse case. He was in court for the pretrial hearings, and he knows the case inside and out. And so we'll be talking to him tonight again. And like I said, I think unlike previous shows, I keep forgetting to take questions. We might do that tonight. Although, you know, we've got a lot of stuff going on here in southeast Wisconsin. I don't know if anybody saw it. It's the weekend. Sometimes people get a bit tuned out. But there was an incident in Waukesha within the last couple hours, maybe 2-3 hours. So Waukesha has their holiday parade, and that was taking place today. And then some, they were saying it's a maroon SUV. There's actually a video of it. There, an SUV goes speeding at high rate of speed through a barrier, a police control barrier, you know, just those little wooden things. So it's not like a big concrete thing or thing. So just those little wooden traffic control barriers that you might see when they're blocking off roads for a parade. And it appears to be intentional, flies down the road, takes out all kinds. I mean, it's a parade, a holiday parade going on. So there's the spectators on the side, and then there's bands and dance troops and, you know, all kinds of things marching in the parade. And so It's interesting that when this kind of thing happens, you know, the rumor mill starts quicker than the news reports start. And I initially heard, oh, there's 30 to 40 to people dead, which, you know, and I get it, in a big crowd, you send a car through, you could see a mass casualty situation, but that was obviously premature. And then I also heard that there was, this person in this SUV drove through the crowd, and then that there was also shooting. That was one of the early rumors that was flying around social media, and I haven't seen that corroborated anywhere. From what I've seen, it was just this SUV, and there is pictures of it that you can watch. There was a live stream of this parade in Waukesha, and you can see on the live stream of the parade where this maroon colored SUV goes careening through, and just being a parade, people, and just life in general, people have video phones, cell phones, smartphones, and video running on their smartphones, and it was a parade, so there was tons of video. There's video of this everywhere of what was what happened and different angles. Coincidentally, just like the Rittenhouse case, I mean, videos from all kinds of different angles, and we'll probably continue to see those videos popping out on social media, which is one of the reasons why it would be nice not to be banned for life from Facebook, so I could see some of those videos more easily. Instead, I'm relegated to secondhand sources like news reports that cite. It's amazing how much news reports now cite social media as their documentation for a particular, and even how social media will quote, especially like Twitter, so the story isn't just about what happened and the basis of facts, but that it's people's reaction. This is what happened, and then here this person on Twitter said this person said that. Even sometimes not even a notable figure, sometimes, or at least I don't recognize some of the figures, but that's how they report these things. They report them and then start talking about the reaction on social media. We got Tom in here tonight. He says, howdy everyone. So Tom Six, I'm not sure if that's Tom if that's my friend Tom from Delavan area, Delavan. I was going to say Delavan Darien, but I think Tom's in Delavan. So I don't know if that's the same Tom, but if that's you, Tom, great to have you in. It looks like Scott just joined the conversation here as well on the chat. And a couple other people popping in here. Gary is in. It is Tom. Perfect. Tom from the Delavan area, good friend of mine and an all-around good guy. And so, yeah, we got some people popping in here to the chat now. Live. If you are just tuning in live, like I said, we will take calls today. Maybe give us, you know, a couple 15 minutes. With that, let me give wrap up that piece on Waukesha. You know, we still don't know what happened. Apparently, mass casualty situation. Again, initially I heard that there was a car through and then shooting as well. I've only seen verified that this SUV went plowing through a crowd. So, you know, thoughts and prayers with the people in Waukesha. I mean, I'm in New Berlin. I'm right next to Waukesha. In fact, I just took my fiance and the dog for a walk in Minooka Park, which is right on the border of Waukesha and New Berlin. My fiance said that going past her house on Cleveland Avenue in New Berlin was just every fire vehicle, police vehicle from New Berlin, and I think West Allis and some other places as well. So, quite an incident there, which I'm sure we'll be hearing about more on the news tonight, tomorrow. Speaking of the news tonight, if you missed it this morning, I was on Upfront with Adrian Pedersen this morning. I didn't catch it, but we taped that Friday afternoon, evening, and then it replays at, well, it usually plays at 11, but I think I don't know if channel 12, which is, I think, ABC, has some award show tonight or something, but I don't know if their news is going to be delayed because of it. But I'm on Upfront tonight with Adrian Pedersen. That should air at, it usually airs at 11 p.m., goes from 11 to 11:30. It aired this morning at 9 a.m., and I didn't catch it in time. I got up at about, by the time I got to the kitchen to turn on TV, it was about 9:15. The nice thing about that is it's a 5-minute uncut segment, so no cuts, no edits. I got my full comments in there versus the 30 or 60 seconds that you might get from a typical news piece. And then I also, I did an interview with Channel 4 on Monday, I believe it was. I did an interview with, and the Channel 4 interview was about a editorial that was in the Kenosha newspaper. about, let's see. I'm now into our conversation about the Rittenhouse case. So let me bring live now Kevin Mathewson, who's been with us the last 3 weeks. And as soon as the studio here clicks in. Hey, Kevin, welcome back and great to have you.
Hey, Nick. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, and first off, woohoo. I mean, you know, this was, this is one of those moments where I think for me, for sure, and probably for others, you'll kind of remember where you were when it happened. You know, I remember where I was when I heard about the OJ verdict. And and I remember saying, I don't know if I said this in the show last week, but I was thinking to myself, you know, if Kyle's convicted and OJ walked, and if Kyle's convicted, I have no faith in the justice system. Fortunately, Kyle walked. I know you were doing some media stuff this week. Let's see, like I said, on Monday, there was a Channel 4 was doing a story, and this is typical media. They don't want to talk about all the angles that they'll cover of a case are going to be these biased angles about the gun control side. So on Monday, apparently some editorial was maybe it was Sunday, some editorial was written in their Kenosha paper that this Rittenhouse case, the verdict wasn't yet in, but regardless, the Rittenhouse case is evidence that we need new laws. We need to change the law from 18 to 21. And that's just, you know, it's insanity because I think this is the way that media works and they use these crises, whether the crisis is of, you know, no matter the context of the crisis, they want to use it to push for, gun control. And, you know, I made the point. Yeah. So Channel 4 came into the story. And that was the typical 3-minute story, but my comments were hacked down to about probably 15 seconds. Changing the law again, where 18-year-olds or adults to change the law so that you can't buy a you can't buy a pistol until you're 21 at a gun store. You could do a private party purchase before that. Can't possess a pistol under the age of 18 unless you're supervised, like at a range or something. But so now they want to take adults, 18-year-old adults who can go start a family, live on their own, and they have no right to protect their home or anything. Forget. And again, you can't get a concealed carry license now until you're 21. There's a bill in front of the legislature to move that to 18, which will go nowhere. They no sooner than, well, the verdict wasn't even in. And here's this editorial. And that's, they use that editorial to start the conversation about gun control. And it's ridiculous. Besides the fact that now in light of the verdict, Kyle clearly needed a rifle for self-defense, so proposing a law to change the age to carry from 18 to 21 is essentially like saying we wish that Kyle had not been able to defend himself that night, which, of course, we know the media does feel that way. I was going to throw that out there. I'll be on – I did 4 on Monday. I don't know if anybody caught that. Channel 12 up front. I taped it on Friday. That'll play again tonight at 11 or whenever up front airs if they have any delays. And then I did a phone interview with Glenn Thrush from the New York Times, which was kind of funny because he knew when he called it. I mean, I know the New York Times and I knew who the New York Times was and obviously their spit. So after he does our interview, he told me when his piece was going to appear and said, you know, I'm sure when you read it, you'll be disappointed that it's got a big left-handed spin on it. So we had a chuckle about that. At least he's honest with himself about their bias. And then one I was going to ask you out, which is why I kept it to last. Did you get to meet on Friday when the verdict came in? I was doing a video with Lars Aas, who's a journalist with the Norwegian Broadcast Network or some, I don't know if that's the formal brand name, but
sure.
Great guy. I met him. Did you get a chance to meet him on Friday?
I did not. So as I left the courtroom, I was on cloud nine. I mean, when you see a kid who's so close to, I mean, I don't think he really had a big risk of being convicted, but those prosecutors certainly wanted that kid in jail for the rest of his life. So it was just so happy. And, you know, even though I was not in jeopardy of going to prison or anybody else in that courtroom, it just felt like a weight was lifted off our shoulder because, you know, a lot of us really sympathize with Kyle. And when I heard not guilty, I just, it felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders, and I felt so happy for him and his family, and it was a beautiful moment. It was
and
such
I saw
a
you.
Moment.
I saw the replay, and I can see you in one of the frames. I can see you, not the first court TV angle, I couldn't, but another angle later I saw, and I could see you in it. And when the verdict was read, I saw your fist pump go up in the air and then kind of like brought it back down because you're not supposed to make gestures in court, kind of like, you know, scratch the back of your head. And I was like, yeah.
Well, I've never really been one to follow rules, and I know I should, but I think we discussed this before, but The prosecutors three different times talked about my publication, the CommercialCountyEye.com, and called it a gossip, where they call it a gossip column, right? And it just shows how much I get under their skin with, you know, exposing all this stuff. And at one point, I think it was the second or the third time, he's talking about this local media outlet that's a gossip brag, or whatever he said, and I raised my hand, and everybody in the courtroom just laughed because they knew exactly what was going on. And, you know, my website got broken like four times because I just, you know, the blue check marks were retweeting some of my articles. And, man, thanks to Lunchbox, I made some money with my ad revenue. So that's just they're not forward thinking. These guys, they wanted to attack me, and they thought that was going to help somehow. But ended up making me some money. And you could see when they were interviewing the local amateur photographer, Nathan DeGruin.
Nathan.
I had the pleasure of talking with Nathan before that. And as you could see, they went from prosecuting a case to try to defend themselves. They tried to disprove misconduct. And the internet memes out there are just hilarious because you ask them stupid questions like, oh, Did you have a camera that night? And he's like, the one I used to take all these pictures that I just brought into the courtroom. I mean, he's just, you know, they said, well, we didn't ask you to change your statement, right? And he said, no, you sure did. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by change a statement? I mean, it was comical. And so anyways, we're talking about your media contact. So as I left the courthouse, I had a small role that I played in the night, the August 25th, the Facebook post I put on, got me banned along the great Nick Clark for life. You know, we should get little badges or something that we can.
We should. We're too free for
fascist. Like challenge coins, banned for life, you know, challenge coins.
Too free for fascist book.
You know, one of the failed Democratic candidates for Congress was out there and said, you know, you need to leave here or something like that. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm happy. You can't take that away from me. And so, you know, a lot of the news media people kind of recognized me. And so I did a bunch of interviews and, you know, it was kind of like my victory lap because there's a lot of people saying that I was helping, you know, in part responsible for this. And, you know, it's one of those things that Kyle, you know, I mean, out of these 12 jurors, there's no doubt that, I mean, Kenosha County is over 50% Democrat, even though it went for Trump the last two elections. So out of those 12 jurors, odds are 6, 7, maybe 8 of them were liberals. And it was a unanimous acquittal on all charges, which is such a great thing because I was not looking forward to our tax dollars going to retrying this kid once, twice, three more times. And so getting that not guilty was just, it was something else.
Yeah, and I was a little bit bummed because on a typical Friday with this, I would have had court TV on. I would have had, you know, we were on verdict watch, and everybody expected that it was going to come Friday because juries tend to get their verdicts on Fridays. And so so I was a little bit bummed because Lars was here doing taping, and he was here for probably 45 minutes to an hour, maybe a little bit more taping. And so I didn't have it. So then his phone buzzes. He pulls out his phone, and he says, the verdict is in, not guilty on all counts. And I was like, I would have loved to see it live. So we quick turned on, and then our interview changed because previous to that, we were talking about, you know, the hypothetical of what I thought would happen. But if I could, I think one of the reasons that this has affected people, and we're so vested in it, and it's not just because we're pro-gun, it's not just because this is a Second Amendment case, but we've had to take it on the fucking chin since November 3rd, 2020, and even before that, because with all the COVID bullshit, we conservatives, we freedom-minded folks, we've been taken on the chin since March of 2020, between all the COVID crap and the mask mandates and the pathetic corona noia and the lockdowns and the executive order overreaches. And then, so we're taking on the chin there, and then we kept thinking, but when, you know, Trump gets reelected, we're going to, all this crap will go to the side, and it would have. And then the election is stolen. I get banned from social media. Then social media goes on, you know, you were banned from social media slightly before that in August. Social media, well, then you got sued. We'll get to that in a second. But then social media, big tech goes on, bandemonium, purge, the big tech purge, getting conservatives off. Anybody, and you know, one of the other things is Kyle was even getting the social media purge before big tech went in with after the election, because let's not forget, this is a kid you couldn't donate GoFundMe, kicked him off. It was difficult to find a way to get money to him, and Facebook you couldn't express support. I don't know, but I suspect that that's one of the reasons I was, again, no reason, no warning. In Wisconsin Carry, I had gotten a group warning that I had approved things that were supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse, and that was a no-no. Facebook had warned me there, but it was just that the group would be, you know, group might be, I forget if they said that the group could be put on probation or whatever they call it, or removed. But I never personally got any, so I don't know why I was banned. I wish I knew, and maybe it was multiple reasons. Who knows? But I think the support for Kyle may have been a piece of it. And certainly other people had been censored because of support for Kyle. It was a big no. Now, and here's a kid that was found guilty. Now, innocent until proven guilty, that applies to the government. As citizens, we can decide we think someone's guilty from the moment that the incident happens. That's our right as citizens. But we're not the government. So in the eyes of the government, it's innocent until proven guilty. And I think in the eyes of the media, they should have a little bit of responsibility in that respect as well. But here's a kid with, now that was found acquitted on all counts, and yet is Facebook going to reinstate people who they previously banned for this? Again, I don't know if that's the reason I was banned, but other people who have been banned or, you know, weren't allowed to talk about it. I mean, you know, it's just, it's so pathetic. And then there's so many sides, so many angles to this. All the people that are angry, you know, people, there's some of this anger is because of all the misinformation in the media. If they've been getting honest, full accounts of what happened since it happened, the full videos and the descriptions of the videos that weren't like, Kyle shot someone who threw a bag at him, because that's how the media would portray this for the whole year. Kyle shot someone who threw a bag at him and then ran away and shot other people who, as he was running down the street, and just like that, you know, it was, and then they said, and then he fell to the ground and shot other people. They didn't say he was knocked out. He fell to the ground and shot other people. And then they'd stop the videos before you see the attack on him. So for all these people that are pissed and think there's injustice, it's because the media, some of them have seen everything, but for some of people that are very casual news observers, it's because they've been lied to for and misrepresented for the last 12 months, 13, 14 months. So, of course, they're going to feel like it was an injustice when their perception had been molded and solidified based upon misinformation. But so that's the people that are angry because of the verdict. But then there's guys like you and me, and it's just it's like it feels like the first victory we've had since November 3rd, and maybe even the first victory we've had since COVID started. And that's one of the things that for me was like, it just felt so damn good to win at something again. And of course it was the right thing. And we would have felt this way, even if it was, if Trump was president and you know, and all this was this case in its own right. But I feel like the case is bigger for us and conservatives, because it's like the first time we've won. And with everything, like this bizarre world, this post-constitutional America, at least this piece still held true to the law, to the Second Amendment, to the right to self-defense. I mean, at least this piece held true. And that's why I think for us, it's even a bigger, and for you, cause you know, you had the Kenosha Guard page, you got sued by, you know, you were co-defendants with Facebook for a short period of time.
Yeah, and Kyle himself.
Yeah, before it got tossed. So, yeah, it's vindication. It's vindication for all of the snarky comments that all of us who've supported Kyle have had to deal with over the last year. It's vindication against all the misinformation that was out there. And so it's one of those things where I'm going to remember where I was. I wish I could have seen it live because you got that, you know, the jury's back and then the news reports on social or in the media. So you had a time to turn the TV on. I'd have been there watching it. I mean, I would have been on the edge of my freaking seat with just my heart in my throat. And then, you know, so it was still fun to watch it back and see the verdicts come in and hear the verdicts come in. And then every time I watched it over and over, I watched for a different person. Like first I watched Kyle's reaction. Then I watched his mom's reaction, watched his sister's reaction. His one sister did a really good job of just kind of staying stoic. I mean, obviously she was scared to, but you could tell that you could just see it in her breathing and her, you know, her kind of quivering lips and stuff.
Well, plus it was confusing because, for example, with count one, there was the intentional homicide, then there was the two lesser. So when I heard, you know, count one not guilty, I'm thinking, okay, well, we're not out of the woods if they say count one, you know, second degree guilty? So I'm like, okay, that sounds good so far. But then when she moved on to count two, I thought, whoa, well, that meant count one is a complete not guilty. And then three and then four, and it happened so fast. And once she said five, you know, Mark Richards banged on the desk and kind of collapsed. And, man, I didn't want to look like a little punk, but a little pussy, I should say. But I almost cried because I was just so happy for the kid.
Oh, yeah, and I got report. I got this journalist here running video, and I'm watching it back. He's like, so we turn on the TV because he's like, oh, verdicts, and we turn the TV. And I'm watching it back, and I'm getting choked up. And he's like, and I've never – cried on TV before, and so he's like, I can tell you're emotional about this. And I'm like, okay, I took like 10 seconds and it seemed like a minute, but I was like, you know, made sure I got that lump out of my throat before I started talking. And then and then I said this has been, I mean, I was on when the first time I saw the videos, I said, and this is back when a significant portion of the pro-gun community, this is back when people on Wisconsin Carry Facebook group were saying he should have never been there. What was he doing? And I immediately came out and said, doesn't matter. This was self-defense. However I started, I support Kyle. Kyle was in the right. This is, you know, and then I asked our board of directors right away and they were all viewed it the same way I did. So we were within, you know, the 24 hours of it happening. We had Kyle's back and that was when some pro gun folks were not sure, because gun folks love to throw people under the – they love to distance themselves from anything controversial because they're so used to it, that firearm owner's inferiority complex, just so used to taking it on the chin that if they could just dismiss something as, oh, he should have never been there, and then you don't have to feel like – because it takes courage and intelligence and energy to defend. It's easier to dismiss.
You know, you had people like Trump, within hours of what happened, He nailed that right on the head. He says, well, it looked to me like if he didn't shoot, he would have been killed, right? So that was a case when we had most of the videos right away, okay? Yep. Just like what just happened this evening in Waukesha, those poor people. Now, obviously, there's a couple scenarios. Maybe this person was having a seizure or some kind of mental episode where they lost consciousness and they ran over these people. Shy of that, you can pretty much come to a conclusion pretty way that this deranged person is guilty, right? So when you have such overwhelming evidence from the onset, yet you have the media completely going the opposite way of what the evidence is, just it makes no logical sense. That would be like if I said, oh, this, you know, let's pray for this person who ran all or these people in Waukesha, you know, maybe they had a bad day. I mean, it goes against common sense when you're watching a kid running from somebody and shooting back. And then once you hear that guy threatened to kill him earlier and like three different witnesses heard that, I mean, it just, I don't know if these people really believe themselves in the narrative or they just, you know, I always thought that liberalism was a mental disease in itself, but it just, I don't know if they're watching the same videos and if they watch the same trial as I did. I mean, I was in there every day And every day it just got worse and worse and worse. And I made friends, you know, with a CNN producer. I won't name him, but at the, you know, the first day, you know, typical type of CNN, you know, banter, oh, these guns in the street, you know. At the end of the first week, he's like, you know what, Kevin, this is not going good. This is going to be an acquittal. And I'm like, okay, if CNN is saying that, all right, now that makes me feel better. And I was, you know, after the third day of deliberations, I'm just nervous, and I'm talking to Cal's attorneys, and they're nervous. It's like, what's taking so long? And boom, there's a verdict. You know, the real heroes in this are the jury, not just for acquitting Kyle, but they ordered lunch early. So it was like 10:30, and then we saw this, you know, the lunch being rolled in, right? And then later I thought, you know what? Those sons of bitches wanted one more lunch out of this. So they ordered one more lunch at like 10:30 because they figure, okay, we got a verdict. You know, we're getting paid $16 a day. Fuck this. Let's get one more lunch. So they got Subway, and then they acquitted Kyle, and they went home and called it a day. So good on them, you know.
I said the day that Kyle was charged, I said it, and I can't go back to Facebook because I'm off Facebook, and everything I ever posted was zapped in a millisecond. Yep. But I said the day he was charged, I said, you'll never find a jury, an honest jury of 12 people in Kenosha, because it's going to take unanimous to convict him.
No.
What I didn't fully take to the other extent was it's going to take 12 to acquit him. So if I'd have thought it through at that point, I knew he wouldn't be convicted. I've never thought for a second he would be convicted. But of all the serious charges, maybe the gun charge, which I thought from word go, because our attorneys we've gone through this before with other cases. So I knew that that exception was there for 17-year-olds with guns, with rifles and shotguns. But having, you know, if I had a process at the time, an acquittal, as I thought about it and as the jury was out, I thought, well, if I should have made the same prediction that I don't think you'll find 12 to acquit, because I believe 25% of the population is hardcore liberal anti-gun, period. And I based that on, back in 1998, we had the statewide referendum here in Wisconsin to add to the state constitution, Article 1, Section 25, the people have the right to keep and bear arms for security, defense, hunting, recreation, and their lawful purpose. That went to statewide referendum in order to be put into our constitution, because that's not just a statute, that's in our state constitution. And that was at the statewide referendum, 74.2% of something, or 74 point something percent of people voted for it. 25 point some percent voted against that. That's that hardcore. So guns in general are a 75-25 issue. 75 people are in support of them, 25 people are against them, no matter what. There's 25% of the people that don't believe we should be allowed to own guns, period. So in the population, that's also that same hardcore committed liberal group, that 25%. The other 25% that gets liberals to this Democrats, this 50% voting threshold, that's just a bunch of dumbass swing voters and people that like buy into the class warfare bullshit, low information voters, as Rush Limbaugh would call them. That's where the rest of the Democrat support comes from. People that, you know, go along to get along, seek the popular alternative, watch the media and get their perceptions from the mass media. That's how the Democrats get that second 25% to get into that 50% threshold. But thinking about that in the sense of a jury, if it's a truly randomly selected jury, the odds are 25% of that jury is going to be hardcore lib, because that's the percentage of the population. And so I always thought there's got to be at least three on the jury that are just not going to want to acquit him no matter what. So that's a testament to how strong the case was for self-defense, because I guarantee there was at least a couple, probably three or four hardcore libs on that jury. And when it came down to it, libs have feelings. That's why all these liberals, they feel a way about this case. And for that reason, besides the fact that they get brainwashed by the media, they just, you can't logic your way out with liberals. It just doesn't work because they have feelings.
Yep.
And logic doesn't affect their feelings. Their feelings trump their logic all the time. So for these jurors, I think probably to be in court with Kyle, to connect with him because he testified, because his emotions were genuine, I just think that was enough for them to say, look, even though we feel this was wrong, like they couldn't send him to jail for you know, for life or for any period of time for what was clearly self-defense. And so
the,
you know,
the jurors have been talking. And so I caught wind from a very, very good source. And so what I was told is that the initial vote, hey, where are we all at, was 10-2. And basically, that 3.5 days.
10 acquittal, obviously, 10 acquittal.
Yep.
Two, yeah.
So those 3.5 days, about half of that, day and a quarter pulled one, and the other day and a quarter pulled the other. And, you know, I was on a jury once with a vehicular homicide, and I remember just hating the defense attorney. I just didn't like the way he talked. He was arrogant. And I thought to myself, you know, the fact that T. Claire was such a dick and just so ungenuine, and he cheated and he got yelled at, I would imagine those jury members didn't like Tom Binger. I mean, he's just a dick. He pushed his limits. He, you know, when he was talking about, oh, you know, the crimes of Joseph Overman, I mean, he lit a dumpster on fire. Oh, wow. He pushed over a porta potty. Oh, big deal. He lit a trailer on fire. Oh, terrible. He's downplaying arson and other serious felonies. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Two people who lived in Kenosha and lived through that shit and probably stayed up all night protecting their home. I mean, it was, and I thought the same thing. I thought there's no way the jury, and I said this on previous shows, and I said it on comments on the MeWe group for Wisconsin Carry. It's like Binger knew he was going to lose. So he was fronting, you know, puffing up for the liberal media and for the hardcore libs that just like their nasty licks. They just like to get their nasty licks. They don't care about what the repercussions of it is. They just like it like I used this example a couple weeks ago, like in the debate with Joe Biden, when Joe Biden said, "Will you shut up, man?" And all the libs were like, "Oh, yeah, Joe, yeah. But that doesn't play good with people. It played good with the hardcore. It played good to your core base that are nasty ass people. But it didn't play good to the general public. And I think that's the same. But Biden, he said it back in that one debate because it was just, you know, red meat for his base. And I think that Binger, the way he was carrying himself, I thought he's just putting on a show for the hardcore libs. He's putting on a show for the coasties. He's putting on a show for all the snarky, nasty liberals who are just miserable people, and they just like to be that snarky, condescending, arrogant, you know, type of snooty person that's going to play good for that small crowd of blue blood liberals, but it's not going to play good for the jury, and it's not going to play good for the general public. And yeah, he
not
came
at
off
all.
As a,
he is just the laughingstock of this world. And, you know, of course, when Tom goes home, there's a couple channels that he can turn on that maybe they'll say, hey, he did what he could, you know, he fought hard. But any other channel, even CNN, they're just talking about how terrible of a job prosecution did. And you're only as good as your facts, right? So the defense went into this case with all of the facts on their side. So you'd rather have good facts than a good attorney any day. But what he did with those facts was terrible. You know, badgering, you know, a photographer who was just out there to take pictures, right? Badgering Kyle, who, you know, for breaking down on the stand. I mean, just asking him the same question over and over and over and over. You know, did you try to kill him? Did you try to kill him? No, I didn't try to kill him. I tried to stop the threat, you know? I think the world hates Tom Binger, and I think he realized that. That's why he started watching, or Lunchbox started taking over more of things. If you notice, he started doing a lot of the questioning and this and that. But I mean, just they didn't like him. That plays into the jury's head too. And I think, you know, these people who say, "Oh, if I was on the jury, I'd send them to prison." Once they're in that position and they think, "Okay, my vote has real life consequences here. Do I really want to put this kid prison because of what I think that the law ought to be, right? That the law says you can carry it and buy it an AR-15, right? The law says, you know, if you have a reasonable fear of death or imminent bodily harm, you have a right to use deadly force. You might not agree with that law, but that is the law, right? So you have to, if you want to do your job at your civil duty correctly, you have to acquit on that point. And I think those two jurors thought, you know what, either that or they just wanted to go to hell home. Who knows? But thank God they made the right choice and it's over.
Yeah, and those jurors, I mean, all those jurors are going to have to sleep with themselves at night. No, those two finally, I sleep with myself at night. I can't send someone to jail for what, you know, as much as I disagree with him being there and that people shouldn't be able to have guns and whatever, he was within the law and he's a nice kid. And I couldn't sleep with myself if I convicted him. The other piece of it is knowing that for the jurors, knowing that, you know, like I said, and that's what I was thinking that first vote, and someone even, I don't know if there was a social media post early on or a Twitter post or something where someone said, you know, it was 10 to 2 or there was a couple. I feel like that's leaked out somewhere. I heard it and I thought, yeah, that sounds, seems about right. And when you're in that kind of a ratio, you know, you just, you know, it's futile. You know, you're not going to convince the rest. I knew that the conservatives would never, not even conservatives, but the rational people would never cave. Cause who's going to cave and send, if it was 6-6, the people aren't going to say, well, you know, I guess, you know, to end this after a week, you know, Kyle's going to go to jail for life. No, you wouldn't be able to sleep with yourself if you did that. So I knew that the people who were on Kyle's side, and when the jury was out, well, that's what I thought. I thought hung jury for sure. And everything was coming down to whether or not it was with or without prejudice. And, you know, and so that's why the verdict did catch me off guard, because I was at that point fully expecting hung jury.
Me too. And when the judge says, you know, the jury has a verdict, I'm thinking, well, it can't. The only thing I was worried about is the defense got rid of the gun charge, right?
Yep.
That would have been the perfect bargaining chip for the both sides. Let's say it was a 6-6 split where they said, the 6 conservatives says, hey, look, let's do guilty on the gun charge and let's do not guilty on the rest. That way we're saying, look, he shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have a gun. And let's go out there, and that'll be the bargaining chip. And then you lost that bargaining chip when it got dismissed. So that was part of what gave me anxiety. And just a full acquittal is something that less than 1% of the people would have ever imagined. I mean, a full acquittal, we're talking curfew, a gun charge, every single
And the greatest one was the gun charge, because for a year, every single news outlet has been promoting that as fact that he was illegally carrying.
Yes.
Every story started with he was illegally carrying a gun, and a gun that he was illegally carrying, and a gun that he was illegally, the gun that he wasn't allowed to have, and he was 17, he wasn't allowed to have, and then boom, that one is tossed before it even goes to the jury. And that's that full vindication. Like we don't even have to spike the football, because that was the spike of the football, that you can't even get him on the gun charge, you worthless. Back to a funny thing is, we've said before, like, Dennis Black is still facing charges, right? That's the one that bought the gun.
Dominic Black.
Yep. He may see potentially is Binger's prosecuting that, correct?
Yep.
So that may be Binger's, and Binger is a vengeful, vendetta kind of guy.
Here's the thing is I'm sure you've heard of the term consideration, right? So prosecutors, defense attorneys, they're not allowed to offer promises for testimony, right? So there can't be a quid pro quo. They can only say, we will give you consideration. So if you heard during the testimony, and tomorrow, he's got court tomorrow, by the way, for a status conference, which my guess is it would be some sort of plea hearing. So you will probably see a plea tomorrow. Not sure. But Dominic Black testified, and the state, for whatever reason, thought that was going to help their case. They could have gotten it into Kyle. They could have said, hey, how'd you get the gun? You would have told the truth. But the state thought they needed Dominic Black to prove their case, so they offered him consideration. But that consideration could be minimal, the prosecutor could say to Dominic's lawyer, you know, hey, look, if you plead guilty to both of these felonies, I will ask for only 2 years in prison. I mean, ooh, that would be, there would be nothing unlawful about that. It would be sneaky, right? But there's nothing unlawful about that. And here's the interesting thing is the charges, if you read 948-62C, it talks about resulting in death. So I haven't looked at the jury instructions, but I'm thinking, well, if that death was now deemed justifiable, does that enhancer still exist? I don't know. So maybe there's a lot to talk about in that case left. But, I mean, who knows? So, yeah, he's got court tomorrow at 1:30. He has Zeminski, who's yet to be prosecuted. And, you know, that's going to trial because it's one of those cases that if a prosecutor doesn't want to make a deal, they'll just say right off the bat, there's no deal. Then it goes to trial because pleading guilty, I mean, honestly, pleading guilty, if you know that you're going to be convicted, is probably the better choice because usually judges, especially Judge Schrader, he loves when you plead guilty because then he'll give you credit. He'll say, look, you saved the taxpayers a lot of dollars. You're accounting for what you did. Thank you. And, you know, now I'm going to give you a little bit better sentence. So he's taking this one to trial. Tom Binger will do his, you know, pony show and dance and act like he's a good attorney. But the facts are on his side. There's videos of this guy. His wife took a video of him starting this trailer on fire. You could show that video and rest, and the case is yours, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be – his wife is in prison. We talked about that, I think, last week where she was in she was on bond for shoplifting, so this revoked her probation, so she's in prison. He's walking the street. I wouldn't be surprised if Schrader maxes this guy out because Schrader has been making some very, very stern comments, even in some of the pretrials with Kyle Rittenhouse, where he has said, you know, how much this pissed him off, this, you know, unrest, as the liberals call it, but the looting, you know, so he's got a class I felony, which is that arson of property that's not a building, disorderly conduct, use of a dangerous weapon, and obstruction of an officer. So those each have the weapon enhancer itself, I think, adds, I'm looking it up now, but adds some potential time. So if the judge really wanted to hand it down, so we have the arson of property, which is 3 years and 6 months, okay, or $10,000. You have the disorderly conduct, which is 3 months, but the deadly weapon makes it six. That's another 9 months. So now we're up to what? We're up to 4 years, 3 months, and then obstructing an officer is 9 months. So what is that? We're up to what, 5 years? So he can get 5 years. Of course, it's a bifurcated sentence. I think probably 2.5 of that would be in. I think he might get every minute of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So
which still would not be, is not just. I mean, a guy who shoots a gun in the air, lights stuff on fire during a riot, five years, 2.5 in, 2.5 out, not sufficient, in my opinion.
I want to, at this point, I'm going to, because I've forgotten to do some previous shows, and sometimes callers surprise me. If anybody's got some questions that they want to pose to us, you know, you, me, feel free to call now, even though, again, most of the people who hear this show are going to be through the podcast and it won't be live. But then, the next thing I was going to ask you was kind of, let's jump into the next, what's next for Kyle. But before we go there, anything else, this whole, like, the verdict this last week, anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention with respect to Kyle or interesting things that you saw down there?
Oh, man. I saw some guy holding a sign that said that Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum are heroes before the verdict. And then after the verdict, I saw him holding a sign that says Free Kyle. So I don't know if he was one of those guys who just wanted to be on TV so bad.
Wanted to be on TV, yeah.
Or what, but I mean, I thought that was kind of funny.
The,
There were several.
I saw some TV coverage. There was like a I don't know how to describe better than kind of a black guy with freckles who was before. He was very supportive of Kyle. I thought that was good that they were showing people of you know, it's not just a bunch of white people supporting Kyle. I was going to talk about. It struck me because my fiance mentioned it too. Joseph Rosenbaum's. Let's talk about this. Joseph Rosenbaum's fiance. She's been on TV and she's, you know, she's got people who look like they're part of the Black Lives Matter crowd, you know, standing right next to her, you know, they got her, you know, with stern looks in their face and she looks like, you know, she could be, you know, a white supremacist herself, just the way she looks. But, I'm thinking of, Huber's girlfriend. She kind of has that like,
yeah, she sued me. So every time she saw me in court, she gave me this like evil look, and it was like, "Come on, chick, just
so
relax."
They're talking to Rosenbaum's fiance, and she's talking about what a great guy he is. And I'm like, and the people don't. And I said to my fiance, I said, "You know, that's the." She said, "But didn't he have a? She have a restraining order?" So I said, "Yeah." I said, "She had a restraining order." So just correct me if I got this wrong. She had a restraining order against him because he couldn't stay, or did a judge have an order that he couldn't be near her?
No, I believe so. So what happened was it wasn't a restraining order. It was a court order. So he had been, you know, in Wisconsin, if you're charged, you know, the Mandatory Domestic Violence Act, the woman can sign the 72-hour notice, right? Or they can not sign it. But in this case, she must have signed it because he was not allowed to be anywhere near her. For the pendency of his case. Well, if you look now, all his pending cases have been dismissed because he is dead. But he was, the state alleges that on July 18th, 2020, that he committed domestic battery against Carrie Answorth and domestic disorderly conduct against Carrie Answorth. So we're talking about a week and a day before. So not only 72-hour, expired, but then once he went into court on the 20th of July, 2020, the court commissioner says no contact, including the residents, electronic or third party with Carrie Ann S., Matthew K., so somebody else that he must have gotten a fight with. So just him going to her house, he would have been charged with bail jumping. Right.
And that's the other thing with him. He had no, this is the other thing that shocks me is with the whole Black Lives Matter angle on this is like Rosenbaum had no, he wasn't a Black Lives Matter supporter. It seems clear to me that he wasn't there for anything to do with like now Anthony Huber apparently supposedly knew Jacob Blake. And I don't know if that's overstated or something, but Rosenbaum, he was just there for the rioting. He was just there for the carnage. He was just there for the, he didn't give a crap about the movement. As is typical for liberals, they pick the most terrible people to become their martyrs. And then he sits there making comments about, you know, using the N word that night. And so it just surprises me how he wasn't more, that people didn't distance themselves from him more. And even from the whole movement, like these guys were not part of the protest. They were the people that were there to leech onto the protest for their anti societal rage.
Well, and that's just it right there. I mean, these, you know, I've dug deep into the entire lives of these three individuals. These individuals loved controversy. They loved fighting. They were attracted to violence. They were attracted to lawlessness. So when they turned on their TV and they saw fires not being put out by firefighters and people bashing windows to stores and stealing stuff and not even have a police officer in sight. These three guys said, you know what? I'm there. It would almost be like if there was some kind of daycare that all the, teachers disappeared. You know, Rosenbaum would be there. It'd be like it'd be like Candyland, you know, all these kids everywhere. It was something that drew those three there. with the lawlessness, the fact that you could break shit, you could damage shit, you could hurt people, and you weren't going to be held accountable for it. And that's exactly what you saw. And unfortunately, their lives of violence, crime, arrests, convictions, probation, jail, finally caught up to them. And they learned the hard way that when you live a life like that, it catches up to you. And it's unfortunate they had to die. But I don't think the world is a worse place with these three people gone. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. No, they were not. They brought it on themselves. They're not nice people. They were the ones that shouldn't have been in Kenosha. Kyle had every moral right to be there and every legal right to be there.
We realized that Gage was not even – he carried a gun illegally there too. Why is the liberal media not pissed off that Gage – carry a concealed weapon to Kenosha, right? It just doesn't make sense. You know, the Second Amendment is shit to them unless it's being invoked by somebody like Gage Grosskreutz, the People's Revolution, who wants to abolish the government. Which, before I want to bring this up, so I think we had talked to where he had sent me his CCW.
CCO, yep.
So I sent that to the Department of Justice. I sent it to the Firearms Unit, and I CC'd a couple of the AAGs. And I sent it to the Office of Lawyer Regulation because here's the thing. He either forged that document he sent to me or he lied on the stand, right? And in Wisconsin, it's an unethical violation of Supreme Court rules to put a witness up to false testimony. So what I think happened is his license is probably revoked or suspended, because I've heard this, that the DOJ is going back to these disorderly conducts, and they're seeing it, they're reading the complaints, and this is true.
Yes. Yes.
And they're seeing, okay, could this be construed as domestic violence? Yeah. So I think what happened is they did like a sua sponte type of review, and they saw that disorderly conduct from when he was 18 or 19 and he hit his grandma. I think they said, you know what, we're yanking this guy because that's DV. It wasn't charged the right way. And so I think they revoked it. And I think when Binger says, you know, was it valid at that time? And Grosskreutz says, oh, no, it was expired. And then, oh, well, did you renew it? Grosskreutz says, no. I don't have a firm, but if I did, I would bet that that was Binger putting him up to false testimony. Because as you and I know, the concealed carry data is protected, which I think is good. You know, I can't get your data. You can't get mine. But in this case, they know. I filed a complaint. And they better investigate, because he either forged the document, which I don't think is true. I think that was a valid CCW permit, but I think it was revoked or suspended. T. Clair knew it. The DOJ knew it. Gravely knew it. But not only did they not charge him with any crimes related to that, but they put him up to false testimony. And that is why, if you're guilty of murder, you should not tell your attorney you're guilty, because if you take the stand, your attorney cannot ethically ask you if you did it, because they know that your answer will be perjury. So, and that's, I know that's a pro tip that none of your listeners will need, but it's unethical in the state of Wisconsin to put your client up or any witness up to testimony you know that will be false. So in that case, Tom would have had an ethical obligation to then, I don't know if to withdraw, or we probably would have had to have a sidebar and stipulate to striking the testimony, because T. Clair knew or should have known that that was perjury. They have access. Perjury. Prosecutors have access to those files. And if he didn't look it up, then he was derelict in his duty.
Yeah. So now what's this will be a fun one. What's next for Kyle? What comes next? There's already, we've speculated, you and I did and others, that there would be litigation, just like Nick Sandman out in D.C. with that protest. And apparently I saw today this is already happening. Someone has verified, yeah, there's going to be litigation happening very quickly against people.
I read on the Babylon Bee that him and Sandman have stipulated just to share CNN stock 50-50 is what I read. So. but I will tell you, I know there's going to be a risk to Kyle right now, okay? The kid is 18 years old. You and I remember what it was like to be 18. And this kid's going to have a lot of money. He's going to win some lawsuits. He's going to settle some lawsuits. He's going to be stacked. Everywhere he goes, Well, half the people are going to shout murderer. Half the people are going to shout hero. People are going to want pictures. They're going to want to shake his hand. This is not something that an 18-year-old is used to doing. You know, it's almost kind of like he's winning the lottery in a sense, because he goes from a normal kid and now all of a sudden he's living this life that he never thought he'd be living. So there's going to be some challenges for this kid. So we're going to have to cut him some slack if he does things that seem stupid or
Justin
silly.
Justin Bieber-ish. Yeah. He's going to have some Justin Bieber moments.
Yeah, and that's just going to happen. You know, I hope he doesn't get himself into any, I hope he doesn't, get into physical fights or, I hope he stays out of trouble in that end. But, it's going to be a challenge. How Kyle can live a normal life from now. I mean, I've done interviews with people in Germany and Sweden, in Spain, Mexico. This is a world known case right now. He's known everywhere. And this is just the thing, is that he can't hide it. So he's going to, like we said, I think it was you who said he's got to run for Congress or something where he's going to be in the public spotlight anyways. That's just the nature of the thing. So I think Matt Getz said he could be an intern at his office, right?
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I like that. My suspect was just that he would turn into like a Joe the Plumber like figure, like someone that be at events.
Personality.
At Republican events and things, and because he's not. And I said this to reporters. I said, you're not a hero because you had to kill somebody. Now, had you stopped the mass murder, then you're a hero for killing somebody. But when you defend yourself, you don't really. It's not seems to be like appropriate to say you're a hero for killing someone that was attacking. It's just, but he's a hero for what he had to put up with. He's a hero for the persecution he had to go through and deal with, and the media lies and the misrepresentations and the big tech working against him. And I mean, he had everything stacked against him except for the facts and except for the truth and the law. He had the law on his side, the truth on his side, and the facts on his side, and everything else was against him. Half of conservatives were against him. The ones that did support him was half support. He was self-defense, but he shouldn't have been there. He had big tech against him. He had the entire media complex against him, from LeBron, the piece of shit James, so you had not just the news media, but the celebrity athletic media types, and it just, he had everything against him except for like those things I said, the facts, the truth, and the law. And someone said, he just, live a normal life. This isn't, you don't want to read too much of this, but it's funny because on his social media, and it's just a thing for people his age, what he said, just trying to be famous. Well, dream
right.
come true. Dream come true. Careful what you wish for. So,
yeah.
So I do think there's more to come for him. I don't think he's just,
which T. Clair, by the way, tried to turn that into some type of, these mass murderers that want, they want their name. He tried to somehow equate that, and it's just like, shut up, man.
Right, because in like every
synonymous with this and a mass shooter. I mean, nothing. Zero.
Yeah, and not every kid feels that, but most kids would say something like that. 18-year-olds, they're enamored with celebrity and pop culture, and just they would all say that. That's why every millennial in the world had a blog about something. Every millennial in the world tried to make a YouTube channel,
sure.
and everybody was. Here's just a question for you what was the tagline? Four doors, more whores. Is that with just relating to a car?
I don't know. It wasn't elaborated on. I know it's a big meme out there where they show like Big Binger wearing a dress that says four doors, more whores all over the place. There's now Twitter handles coming up with that. That wasn't discussed, and I can't figure out what it is.
Because I'm like,
cool car, you'll get more ladies. I don't know.
Yeah, like I'm just feeling like I'm old because I don't get it.
So, it must be a millennial thing.
Yeah, or Gen Z or X, or not Gen X because I'm Gen, Gen Z or whatever.
I'm technically considered a millennial, which it bugs me, but.
Yeah, we'll give you honorary Generation X status.
Great.
I'll bestow that upon you. But yeah, I was like, okay, I don't get that. Is that like, Is that like because you got a four-door car and that just means that you can, because maybe that's not cool to have a four-door car versus like a sports car, two-door coupe or something. And so four doors just means more horror.
My first car was a 1991 Ford Escort station wagon. And I had four doors. I had a hatchback. So if I really needed that extra person in the back, I could handle it. And man, all I cared about is A to B, you know, that was it.
The same. Now, coincidentally, my first car was a Ford. It was a Ford Mustang, but it was the LX, so it was just the four banger. I would have taken anything. I just wanted my freedom of wheels. And I looked at Escorts, and then I just did the one I found was a little bit overpriced, had lower mileage. So I ended up with a cooler looking car with the Mustang LX, but it was, I would have taken it. Same thing. And now kids nowadays, I mean, I think about my daughters and that, well, they're a little spoiled, but our youngest is now going to be driving a minivan because I'm not getting her a car right away. And it's just the worst thing in the world. I was like, God, when I was your age, anything. And I didn't care if it was anything. And the minivan, it's because I bought my fiance a brand new MDX Type S that's coming in. And then so she currently drives a really nice Honda Odyssey minivan. It's like a 2014 or something. And I'm like, it's got a great stereo. And I'm just like, you know, leather seats. I'm like, Julia, you're still going to be driving a nice vehicle.
More bougie, especially with the girls.
That's funny because that's exactly what my daughter says. She goes, they use that term all the time.
Bougie. So, did you see Gravely's statement he released after the verdict?
Just briefly, I saw one of it. I don't know if I remember even if I read it all the way through, but I did see it.
Slimy politicians like him are just incapable of just doing a straightforward release. So he had to throw a little zinger in there. So we respect the jury verdict based on 3.5 days of careful deliberation. Certainly issues regarding the privilege of self-defense remain highly contentious in our current times. We ask that all members of the public accept the verdicts peacefully and not to resort to violence, right? So you have that first line where they say, oh, based on 3.5 days of careful deliberations. In other words, well, you know, they were pretty close to finding him guilty. No, they were never going to find him guilty. 3.5 days is not unreasonable for a murder. I know it's high, but the issues of the privilege of self-defense remain highly contentious. I don't think so.
No.
They weren't contentious until people equated race into this one. I mean, you see somebody use self-defense, it's cut and dry most of the time. So to suggest that self-defense is a contentious issue, no, it's not. This one was because the media made it. One, and it shouldn't have been contentious because you shouldn't have charged the damn thing, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You know, this was your thing that you suckered Binger, and I'm sure Binger, you know, I'm sure Binger said, boss, I'll take it, no problem. And Gravely's like laughing under his breath, like, man, kid doesn't know that he can't win this case. You know, sure, you want it, you got it, right?
Yeah. But, you know, and it's funny because if Kyle had been found guilty, no one would have been worried about riots and, you know, unrest. It would, you know, but because Kyle's acquitted, they all know, and that's everyone. Oh, we hope for peace. We hope for God, please. You know, I thought Tony Evers' statement was pathetic, like the pathetic.
Stupid. Yeah, if everybody should be free from violence. Well, are you talking about Kyle, Tony?
Right. Joe Biden had the best statement, I thought. He just said he supports, at least, and I only saw part of it. I don't know if he forgot what he said and said something.
He said he was
later,
angry and concerned, but that we should respect the verdict.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I just saw that we should respect the verdict, and that's, you know, and then that's the only clip I saw, that we should respect the verdict. I'm like, okay, that's it. Keep your mouth shut. Done. And then Kamala Harris was flipping off at the mouth. And
yep, I saw that when I was scrolling through Pornhub, and I saw this video that the headline says, creepy guy fucks himself in front of an audience, and I looked, and it was a picture of Binger. So, yeah, 4.6 million views. I mean, yeah, millions of people watched Binger, this case exploded, and Mark Richards said it best. He says, you know, you don't get to cheat just because the case is exploding into your face, you know, and the Kenosha News was outside, and they had a live stream going, and they caught me, and they said, well, what do you think of the case? And I'm like, you know what, I only have a second. before they turn it away. But I said something like, you know, justice was done. I said the prosecution cheated and they still lost. And it was live, so they couldn't scrub it. And that's exactly what happened. They cheated. They had a case that they couldn't win. They cheated because that's, I guess, the only way they could have come close, and they still lost. So that would be like the football game, the Packer-Bears, where the refs are just throwing flags on the Packers the whole game, and the Packers still win. Well, then the Bears don't have an excuse, right? But if it's the other way, you can have an excuse. But in this case, I don't know what Binger's telling, you know, his you know, pillow buddies at the steam, Kenosha steam baths, but what is he going to say? If his buddies say to him, Tom, how did you lose this? I almost want to speculate that he'll probably say something like, yeah, you know, white supremacy is on the rise. And, you know, I think that the jury probably had some implicit white supremacy. I mean, what else? I mean, what would you think he tells his buddies why he lost the case?
Yeah, I think that Binger, the way he was acting, I think he was playing up for the liberal elite coasties, but then he doesn't recognize how quickly that he's a nothing to them, and that this was just this was just a manufactured crisis that the media was using to push their, you know, race class or race warfare agenda. And I think they expected more of him than they got. And so he's not going to be well received in any circles.
And, you know, and that's a good point, because when you look at the, when you look at these people who are just, the liberal tears are just flowing from their eyes, they blame him. He's one of the people they blame. They blame the judge. They blame the defense. They blame the prosecutor, the jury. Obviously they blame everybody. But that's the funny thing is, you're right. It's even the liberals are turning on Binger. You know, you should have done a better job. You know, Gravely should have prosecuted this himself. You know, look, I dislike Michael Gravely. I dislike him a lot. But he is the best trial lawyer in that office, period. It's undisputed. Every serious criminal defense attorney that you talk to, and I like to say that I work for the top five in Kenosha County, they all are unanimous. He is the best. So the fact that he didn't take that case only tells you he knew it was a loser, and that's what the media outlets are reporting. He knew it was a loser, and he didn't want to be associated with a loser case, and that's just how he is. You know, he prosecutes the Marquise Fuller case. You know, that's going to be an easy case. He's going to win, or, you know, he knew he was going to win, and he went won. The mom witnessed it. This Crystal Kizer case, I don't know if you've been following that. That's going to be another one where if this privilege is denied by the Supreme Court, that's going to be the easiest case in the world to prove, because she put it on freaking Facebook. Yeah, I killed a dude and stole his car, and now I'm riding in his BMW. She confessed to police. Yeah, you know, I shot him in the head and then I burned his house down. How do you not get a conviction out of that? All the physical evidence is there. So he's going to prosecute that case, right? Of course. Because he wants to be on the front page, and he put away a murderer. Guess what? The left is eating him alive over that case, and they're going to spit him out.
Here's a question. So these charges were filed within, like, forget if it's 24 or 48 hours after, but they charged Kyle right away. There's no way they could have done a full investigation. It took them. And here's just, now I'm going to throw another side in here. The irony here is that this whole Black Lives Matter, country's racist thing, and injustice, after a black police chief deemed, this riots took place after Jacob Blake was shot, and a black former police chief from Madison, who's an ultra liberal, deemed that justified. So what precipitated these riots was deemed justified, and so there was really no real reason to riot anyway. And then Kyle Rittenhouse shot three white guys who had, at least for sure for Rosenbaum, no connection to the Black Lives Matter movement or protest or sentiment. I think with Gage Grosskreutz, I see no connection for him for the Black Lives Matter movement. He was just an anti-government, anti-societal. He was just an anarchist type.
Yep, exactly.
And then I've heard that Huber was he knew Jacob Blake. I don't know if that's true or not, because they don't strike me as the kind of guys, you know, a skateboarder and, older black wife beater that just, they don't strike me as guys that would be hanging out together. But supposedly they said on the news that, which again, if you don't watch news, you're uninformed. You do watch news.
You know what? Honestly, they probably spent a day or two in the joint or something together. I mean, like you said, you know, when you see a 26-year-old riding a skateboard, you either figure he's got too many DUIs or speeding tickets or something. There's just something wrong with a 26-year-old who gets around on a skateboard. I mean,
so where I was going with this was, so Gravely charges us so quick. I would feel like he must have been getting calls from who knows who, Tony Evers, you know, the liberals, telling him, you need to charge this. You need to charge this. We can't have.
Oh, of course.
So those people had to be putting pressure on Gravely to charge this. Because, again, whether I forget if it was 24 hours or 48 hours, within 48 hours he was charged. I mean, it took him 6 months or more to investigate the Jacob Blake, which was like two videos, one scene, everybody that was there was at the whole scene. And then this one they charged within what, I forget, do you remember if it's 24 or 48 hours?
24 hours.
24.
Yeah, and 24 you, hours. I think you were at work during this day, but they brought that up, right? So I've never seen this before, and I've watched a lot of criminal trials. Is the prosecutor asked the detective why there would be a strategy of charging somebody right away before all the evidence was in, right? Which I thought was an improper question, because a police officer is not a lawyer, one. Two, they have no experience as prosecutors. And three, there's some got to be another reason. But he asked this detective, you know, now, we charge this case within 24 hours. The detective says yes. And that's because the defense asked him, you know, this was charged within 24 hours, right? Detective, yes. Have you seen all, did you watch all the videos when this was charged? No. Did you have all the evidence? No. Did you do all the witness statements? No. Did you analyze all the phones and GPS? No. Okay, so then the on redirect, the prosecutor asks, well, you know, isn't it a common strategy of prosecutors to charge because blah, 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 you know, somebody's out of state and you want to make sure you get them extradited. Oh, yeah. And so the detective was pretty much coached in a leading question to give prosecutorial strategies, which just boggled my mind. So then if you remember Crystal Kaiser, I don't want to go too deep into that, but there was a girl that was wandering the streets half naked, and she said, oh, you know, she was on drugs, and that's how they found this scumbag pedophile who had tens of thousands of images of child porn in his home and videos of him having sex with underage girls. So they had enough right there, PC, to lock him up till kingdom come, right? So what did Gravely do is they let him go on a summons and complaint, which means come to court on this day. That's when he was shot and killed. So you have on one hand Kyle Rittenhouse, who protected himself against being killed by three violent people, charged in 24 hours. Now you have a guy where they found memory cards hidden under lamps and hidden behind pictures on the wall, memory cards everywhere, DVD players. I'm talking tens of thousands of images and videos of child porn that were confirmed because they can match these videos up electronically with the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, confirmed underage victims where they knew the identity of the victims. They had all that probable cause, mountains of evidence, and they let this guy walk out the fucking door. And by the time he had a bullet in his head and his house was burnt to crisp, I think it had been a month already, and Gravely tells the Kenosha News, oh, actually, we're about to charge him the next day. So when it's politically charged and it fits their narrative, they charge him within 24 hours. But if it's just
I feel like it probably came from even higher up than Tony Evers, some nationally, the Democrat power brokers, because they couldn't have this kind of thing. By this kind of thing, I mean, if they had not charged Kyle right away, that would embolden all kinds of people to protect, because these riots were going on all across the country last summer, and this kind of thing would embolden, and this is still pre-election. The Democrats need these riots. They need this unrest. They need the country burning because they think that's going to help them get Biden elected. And so if Kyle would have been justified, that would have chilled, because this, look, for all you looters, rioters, wilders, you know, wilding, whatever the kids call it, used to call it wilding a couple of years ago, that just are going to go have a hot time in the old town, burning shit. And No, it could cost you your life, because these people are going to be there to, the armed citizens are going to be there to protect businesses. The law is on their side. And if you fuck with them, you might end up dead if you attack them. That would have had a huge, I mean, a lot of the people there were very at these protests, right? They were just young people just in it for the good time. And like typical young people don't recognize the consequences that could happen. But all of a sudden, a couple of people are dead. And again, those people attacked Kyle. But it would have just had this massive, I wouldn't be surprised if there was parents who were like, let their kids go down to the riots. When I say parents, you know, probably the kind of parents that aren't very involved in their kids' lives anyway, but they just really didn't care that their kids were down there because, oh, it's, you know, supporting the Black Lives Matter thing and, oh, nothing is going to happen. And, but then here, but whether it was Portland or whether it was, you know, any of the other places, and then it was Wauwatosa a couple weeks after this in Kenosha, but they needed those riots and they needed citizens to be standing down. They needed citizens to be worried and they needed the rioters to feel emboldened and safe, like it was a safe place to go do their carnage. And so that's why they needed to quench this right away. Like you can't have these uppity law-abiding citizens exercising the Second Amendment, protecting businesses and getting away with it. And so, I mean, you know, it may have come even higher.
And that's a good point because, you know, people like Gravely want people like Biden in office. I mean, these rogue progressive prosecutors, it's like they become the legislature, right? They decide what charges to charge. They decide what charges not to charge. They charge things that are not illegal, like in the case of Kyle. They charge him with murder, and that's not what he did, right?
Right.
So it's just outrageous how this can even happen. And, you know, not enough people are blaming the court commissioner who bound over Kyle. I mean, that's supposed to be the point of the court proceeding. That's supposed to weed out the bad cases, right?
Court
commissioner bound it over and gave him a $2 million bond. I mean, that was outrageous, you know, and he's appointed by the judges in Kenosha here. It was a good day, and, you know, it was just so happy just to know how many liberals were crying and screaming in their homes.
And that was, and that's why I love watching. That's why some of my people that I'm friends with on social media and stuff, they're upset because they're still, the news media still isn't getting the due. You know, news media still isn't coming clean and no mea culpas. And you're never going to get that from the libs, but we won. We won. And this is just like after the election when people were still snarking on Trump. When I talked to Exxon, I'm talking 2016. You have to enjoy the moment of victory because we haven't had a lot the last year. But I think that's about to change. And I've said this to people for the last, you know, few weeks because I'm getting this impression that I started thinking this way when, you know, 2020 sucked with COVID and all the bullshit. COVID wasn't the worst part of 2020. It was the government executive orders and totalitarianism that sucked with COVID. But, you know, I think we need to get ready to start winning again because we've got the victory here with the Rittenhouse case. You know, enjoy the holidays, but the midterms are coming. Those are going to be really, really good for us conservatives. Trump's social media is supposed to be coming out next year, which I think is going to be a really, really good challenge to Facebook. And Facebook is ripe for a challenge. Facebook is ripe for, I mean, I can't think of anything else that people use so much that they hate. I mean, conservatives hate Facebook. So if Trump gets his out there and does it right, which I think he's going to, and that's why he hasn't really jumped on any other ones because he's waiting for his, I think it's going to be a legit challenge to Facebook. And I think it could upend Facebook because Facebook needs conservatives on it because liberals are shitty customers. Liberals are, not the demographic that advertisers chase as much. They're stingy. They're, you know, and so you get, and liberals don't even like being amongst other liberals. Liberals always want to go where the conservatives are. It's how, you know, Wauwatosa turned into from a nice place to a shithole because the liberals wanted to go to a nicer place than Milwaukee. It's why Shorewood turned into a shithole because liberals wanted to go to a nicer place than Milwaukee. So the liberals are going to flock to Trump's social media too because they want to be where the conservatives are, and they're not happy. Like they say, call it an echo chamber. Conservatives, we want to live our lives and we enjoy the company of like-minded people because especially, you know, when you get to be 30-plus, 40-plus, and you know what your political beliefs are, and they're not going to change, and they don't change based upon the wind. It's principled. You don't need to, liberals, they always want, you should challenge your beliefs. No, you just say that because you want us to think like you. And our beliefs have been challenged. We believe, you know, our faith and our principles and our constitutional principles, those aren't going to change. So we don't need to. It's sometimes just more comfortable to be among like-minded folks because you know you're not going to change. And so why not just be around people who feel the same way you do? And that's what, you know, Trump's social media is going to be for those people. And the liberals are going to want to be there because the liberals aren't happy in their own miserable little world, you know, complaining about how things aren't the way they want them, but amongst themselves. So yeah, I think that Trump's social media could be huge, a huge stab to big tech. And so that's why, you know, I'm feeling optimistic. You know, it's nice to get this victory with Kyle's case. And it's nice that it's over because it would have just sucked to have a hung jury. And then, you know, they would have dragged that out. Are they going to retry him? Are they not? They would have just left it open-ended. Kyle would have had the cloud hanging over his head. The narrative would have still been, oh, see, that's how close he was to guilty. They couldn't even come to a jury, you know. But no,
it's
complete vindication. And if the judge would have had to dismiss it with prejudice, then it would have been all the judges racist
judge.
We would have won, and if we'd have tried him again, we would have won, but we couldn't. And it was the best possible outcome. It was a full victory, not a tainted victory, not a tie goes to the runner, full victory. And like I said, you know, to my friends, to the listeners, you know, enjoy the holidays, spend time with your family. Next, after the holidays in January, you're going to see the election cycle start firing up, and Democrats are running scared. They're going to get slaughtered in the midterms. The midterms are not statewide races. Those are congressional races that are going to – well, the senatorial races are statewide races, but the congressional races, those are ones where they can't cheat because they can't just run up the tally with fake votes in Madison and Milwaukee because in the other parts of these states, it's – you know, not rural areas, but it's areas that the Democrat stronghold doesn't exist, and you're going to have fair elections in those areas, and those areas with those rural Democrats are going to get slaughtered. And so, you know, we're going to take over the House, we're going to probably take over the Senate, and then Trump's social media comes out next fall, and we're going to be winning again. And it's, you know, we got a long way to claw back from. The economy is going to be suffering in the meantime. Illegal immigration is going to be, you know, it's not going to be all stars and butterflies, but I think we're going to start winning here, and I think it's going to start to feel real good.
Do you think Trump is going to be the nominee in 2024?
100%. I'm Trump DeSantis. And for all these people who are like, and I heard it the other day when I went to a funeral in Delavan, a conservative. He's like, well, you know, I support Trump, but I'm really hoping for someone else. There's a number of Republicans who are just really hoping for someone else because I think they're the ones that like to go to their kids' soccer games and feel accepted by all the little Libby Lou's. They think that there's a conservative out there who's going to be Trump's policies. They're not going to have to feel bad for supporting or feel like talked down on, but that's going to happen with it. If DeSantis was the guy who gets the nod, then he would be Hitler and he would be this terrible person. And then you're not going to have this. It's same thing happened with Scott Walker. People, they turned him into this terrible person. Scott Walker was a damn choir boy. I mean, and he Eagle Scout, and he never, you know, said a bad thing about anybody. And they found ways to paint him as this evil person that you were supposed to feel, ashamed to support. And so I think some Republicans that are looking for someone that they don't have to feel ashamed to support, you're never going to get that because you're always going to be made to feel ashamed for supporting a conservative. And if you think there's a conservative that's going to shine so bright that you won't have to feel ashamed, the media will tarnish that star and make you feel ashamed for supporting him. So Trump rolled over the field when he didn't have, even like guys like me, I was a Ted Cruz guy until after the primary. Trump rolled over the field when he didn't have the support that he had now. Trump is going to roll over any primary field if DeSantis or whoever decides to try to challenge him. He's going to roll him over, which DeSantis I don't think would. But I'm Trump DeSantis. That's 12 years of slop busting. Trump hits the ground running. Trump already knows because remember, Trump's first term, he had all kinds of problems, big turnover in his staff, hiring people that betrayed him, from Sessions to, you know, his chief of staff. He had so much turnover, all the leaks. I think Trump now, when he's elected for his next term, in which I believe he will be, then he will be able to hit the ground running. He knows the game. He won't have that slow, bumpy start. Even with that slow, bumpy start, look at what he did as president. I mean, it was phenomenal. But yeah. he's gonna know who he can trust in his cabinet. He's gonna know, and if he has a Republican Senate and House, I mean, Katie, bar the door, we're gonna get some shit done. And then I think DeSantis could be a great understudy. He's gonna have Trump's mentorship to show him how to navigate that swamp as well as Trump did. And then, like I said, it's 12 years of swamp busting because DeSantis seems like a really principled dude to me. And so yeah. So I think we got 12 years of swamp busting ahead of us. And, you know, and for as much as Joe Biden destroyed and the liberals destroyed the economy this year, you know, we'll build it back. And that'll be the build back better when Trump's reelected, and we will build back better. And so yeah, I see good things ahead, and you know, that's my my pipe dream, and I'm sticking to it.
Why? So. I am just as optimistic as you are.
All right, Kevin, well, truly a pleasure to have you on these past few weeks. I mean, you had insight that no one else could have had. I mean, the numbers on the show have been way, way, way up for people listening, and so I know people appreciated it. And you know, we'll do this from time to time. I mean, I think you know, your experience, and you know, there's stuff coming up in Kenosha that I think is interesting, with some other cases. And yeah, I think you know, from time to time, I'd love to have you back on, and we'll go back and forth on some stuff.
Well, very good. Thanks for having me, and I hope you have a good rest of your evening.
Yeah, have a great night, and stay free. Talk to you soon.
Bye, buddy.
All right. Thanks again to Kevin for coming on these past few weeks. You know, it was like I said to Kevin. I mean, it feels good to win again, and it's been a long time. COVID was just frustration after frustration and head shake after head shake. You can't believe what's going on. Then the stolen election, and then, you know, just before that, Kyle getting charged, and it just everything seemed to be coming against us. But this was a victory. It was a full victory. It was a victory that should leave you feeling optimistic. And like I said, enjoy the holidays. Campaign season is going to be starting in January. Democrats are going to get slaughtered in the midterms. Trump's social media coming out next year. Big tech's going to take it in the chin. And yeah, a lot of good stuff to look forward to. So, all right, that's the show for this week. I've got some topics here that are a little bit evergreen that I'm going to keep in the queue for future weeks. So just, I didn't want to throw them in here with all the Kyle Rittenhouse stuff going on. So we've got, already have some stuff lined up for next week. Probably do a show next week. It's Thanksgiving weekend, but we'll probably be here for another show. So you guys have a great week. Carry on, stay free, and enjoy this victory. Be well armed.
Sniper Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.